Our guest tonight is the man behind the Referee Forum, the internet's biggest and best independent resource for referees. He's an ordained minister, and his site's hashtags Abuse Us, Lose Us, and No Ref Left Behind sum up his muscular global advocacy for match officials, which includes challenging online trolls. It's great to catch up with Ant Canavan, who joins us from England. Hello, Ant.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me, mate. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I've just read through the last 3 months of your Twitter feed as penance for this interview, and I've got to say it's almost ruined my night. It's really unbelievable, yeah. Isn't it?
It's depressing, really, especially when refereeing at a grassroots level, especially, is a hobby, and hobbies are meant to give people pleasure. And for the most part, it did up until the last few years, when there's been some sort of cultural or societal shift where everyone has absolutely no problem with just tearing into the referee, regardless of who that referee is, whether it's a good performance, a bad performance. The most important thing for the people that are tearing into referees is that their team wins. And that team could be a bunch of eight-year-olds playing on the park for the very first time. It's a depressing place to be on the centre of the park at the moment.
Well, how can anybody say that it's not a red alert emergency crisis with referee abuse and sometimes thuggery from top to bottom in English football that's led to a combination of all-time high ref abuse, a shortage of officials, anywhere from 15 to 40% down, depending on the league, thousands of referees leaving football, no new refs being trained. I mean, it sounds like to me like the perfect storm for disaster. Is this the sport's biggest issue?
You would have to say yes, because, and here's why, the top referees that we've got at the moment, they've come through a system where they received a good amount of support to get to where they are. The initial phase where they qualified and they've stepped up and they've gone through the leagues, they did this in the 80s, the 90s and the early noughties. There was a lot more respect for referees at that time. And I just fear that in maybe 10 years' time, when the quality of the top referees in England isn't the same as it is now, it's because there's almost like a filter being put on at grassroots from the referees that are coming through now that would make the top echelons of officiating. They're being put off it because of this initial lack of support, lack of mentorship, and just being literally thrown to the lions as soon as they're qualified as a referee. I mean, I know that can't be negative all the time, and there are some counties who train their referees and they're very, very good at looking after them and mentoring them for the first 5 to 10 games. But then after that, there is no structured framework to look after them. And as I said, if it's not the you know, you as a referee, your initial games of football should be stress-free, hassle-free, and the easiest games that you do. The football inside the white lines is not the problem on those first games. It's the football parents, the parents of those 10-year-olds, of those 8-year-olds, the ones that think they've got the next Lionel Messi or Steven Gerrard, and they want to live their lives that they failed to live through their children. And if that means, you know, you can't criticize your child, because no parent wants to do that, really. No one wants to say, oh, my lad's crap at football, my daughter isn't going to be the next best thing. They also don't want to say, well, you lost today because your opponents were a little bit better. No one wants to kind of give the praise to the opposition anymore either. That's something that's gone out. No one will hold the hands up and say, do you know what? We lost today because the opponents were just far, far better than us. So the scapegoat for this scenario now is the man in the middle. We would have won if the referee had been better. If he gave the free kicks our way, if he spotted the offside that he missed, blah, 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 blah. In the end, it's irrelevant. If the team is good enough, they'll win the games regardless of the referee. And in the same breath of that one, if people are blaming referees for defeats, surely by the same logic, when they win, they need to say, and we won today because of the referee. He gave us some offsides, he gave us some fouls that went our way, a penalty, and we won the game. And thanks to the referee, because if it wasn't for you, we would have lost. That's the same logic, but you never hear that.
It's amazing. I just go back to one of your earlier points. One of my favorite quotes from Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, is the greatest burden a child must bear is the unlived life of its parents.
Yeah. And that is more applicable to youth football than anything else in the world, I think.
I just want to take you through some examples. Northumberland, one of the largest leagues in Europe, They've gone on strike over the level of abuse. There's a referee strike in Dublin. Schoolboys and schoolgirls in Ireland, all games cancelled because of constant abuse and threatening behaviour from managers, players, coaches, supporters. In the USA, the Young Sportsman Soccer League is having silent weekends because of referee abuse. There's a Christian League suspended because of too many abuse reports. And the Northeast Combination Football League last month forced to put a blackout for referees on. No match officials appointed, and they have to find their own because of the abuse. It's not just England. It's all over.
Yeah, yeah. It's a global shift. As I said, it's societal. You look at the shift, it's evident in politics as well. The way that people are now thinking more of themselves and rather than what's the greater good? Do I have to make a little self-sacrifice in order for greater good? People seem to have foregone that. Maybe COVID is something to do with that. Maybe there is another, you know, outlying influence that is making this shift towards people thinking more of the self than of the community. But it's definitely, it manifests itself in aggression and physical threats and threats of violence on the football pitch. I'm not going to lie, it can be scary sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm a big lad. I know how to look after myself. I work in the security industry as well. So I know how to handle myself and how to defuse situations without the need for violence. Even with all those tools in my toolbox, even with all that, there's sometimes I do think the worst that could possibly happen to me in this football match is that I don't come home at the end of it. I end up going off to hospital because I've been assaulted. Actual bodily harm has happened to me. The instances to me myself in terms of abuse, in terms of aggression, are few and far between. But as I said, I'm in so many WhatsApp groups where people reach out in the WhatsApp groups or on Twitter or on Facebook or on Instagram to say, this has happened to me today. The thing is, they shouldn't be asking me. They should have a support framework given to them by their national body, by their local regional body, whomever. It shouldn't come down to an independent resource that's done voluntarily on the internet to look after referees or advise them on what's the best thing to do.
Agreed. One post that stayed with me on your feed was from Tom Boardman. I think the time has come for me to consider a break away from refereeing. I went to bed and woke up thinking about the abuse received. Football can't be saved from itself. It turns people into animals. Why is those green, beautiful green fields in Australia, England, America, why are they the last permissible bastion where you can verbally abuse, disturb the peace and abuse someone, a child, an adult? Why is that? Why do we allow that?
The people that could fix this are also the people who have a revenue stream from the abuse.
Yeah.
So say your referee gets abused by a parent on the sideline. Okay, so you put in a misconduct report to your county FA, and the county FA sends this to the club, this misconduct charge, saying, this has happened, how would you plead? It's either guilty or not guilty. Most clubs can't be bothered going to a tribunal or a hearing or anything like that. So they'll say, okay, it did happen, we are guilty, and we're sorry. And with that will come a fine and a warning against their future conduct. Now, if you multiply that process by the amount of refereeing abuse that goes on out there, say each fine is £50. Well, if 10 instances of abuse, you've raised £500. 100, you've raised £500, and so on and so on. You look at the cash that these county FAs have in their banks. It's not pocket change. It's not like they're operating not for profit. Some of them have got £1 million in the bank. Yeah. And what I would love to see is them to use that money to put back into looking after the referees, seeing as that seems to be the primary source of their revenue generation.
Yeah.
Look after your referees, use that money to make the, and I'm not talking about, look, the FA have just come out with a brand new respect advert saying it's very high production value. I know a couple of the referees that are in the video and they've done a fantastic job in terms of presenting themselves, you know, professional looking referees and stuff like that. But it's a completely ineffective tool in stopping abuse and in curbing this aggression that is rife. It's like a cancer in football right now, and it's spreading fast because there's no incentive for the FAs to stop the status quo because they're making so much money from it.
Amazing. And we all know that the fish rots from the head, and the role modelling comes straight down from the professionals and the coaches abusing referees on TV. And I mean, the players at the top show total disregard for officials. And if ever that was in doubt, the stuff we heard when there was empty stadiums for COVID, for me, was a real eye-opener. What other sport allows abuse and mobbing of officials? And why aren't the FA cracking down at least at that top level, that terrifying normalization that comes from the role model?
Again, it comes down to money. You've got to say the top football, especially in England, it's fair to say the Premier League is the best league in the world.
Yep.
And you've got your best players, the likes of, off the top of my head, Cristiano Ronaldo is someone who's guilty of this. If he doesn't get his own way, he will throw a tantrum. He'll throw the ball away. He'll stomp his feet. He'll shout and scream and all that sort of stuff that you expect from a toddler. The referee should be dealing with that as dissent. The yellow card should come out. And he does it more than once in a match, which he does. He gets the red card and he misses the next game. Now, the people that put the money into the Premier League want to see the likes of Ronaldo play every single week. So you've got the referees at that level. Don't get me wrong, they are brilliant. They are they're there for a reason. They are the top, top referees. They've come through the system. They've proven their ability. But when they get to the top level, when they get to the Premier League, they become entertainment facilitators. And people want the entertainment of 11 versus 11. And they, you know, as much as we say, yeah, it's horrible for the referee to receive dissent, abuse, having screaming in the face, actually, as a form of entertainment, it goes back to the days of the gladiators of the Colosseum. People are going, yeah, I want to see more. I want to see more aggression. I want to see. It's entertainment at the top level. What we need to do is say, look, we do have two tiers of football now. And thanks to things like VAR, electronic communications, you've got this elite level of refereeing where you've got all the tools, all the kit, all the bells, all the whistles to facilitate an entertainment spectacle. But down at the lower levels, at the grassroots, you know, outside of the professional football pyramid, we don't have the same tools. We've got inexperienced referees. We've got unfit referees. We've got referees that aren't up to date with the latest laws of the game. But the people that play the sport expect the same standard of officiating as they see in the Premier League, where they've got a referee, two assistants, a fourth official, a VAR operator, an assistant VAR operator. I think you've got reserve assistant referees. So you've got a whole team on the Premier League, but they expect the same standard of decision making from one bloke who could be having a midlife crisis, he's got a bit of a belly, he hasn't read the rules for about 5 years. The expectations of the standards of the referee at both levels are the same. And the frustration and the aggression comes about when the referee doesn't perform at the same level. I think that's something that we go back to. Referees are human, they'll make mistakes, but not as many mistakes as the players during the game. And yet the standards and expectations of that referee are that very, very few mistakes are made. In fact, the fewest on the pitch, if not perfection, is expected.
So we end up with the sad reality that many refs have been trained by what they're seeing on TV to think that abuse is part of their role.
Yeah, it's, there's no getting around that. It is. The best footballers want to play like Ronaldo. The best referees want to officiate like, pick a name, the Michael Oliver or Martin Atkinson, the top referees you see week in, week out. Mm. But there's such a gulf between the two. Your Sunday League footballer isn't going to play like Ronaldo, and your Sunday League referee isn't going to referee like Martin Atkinson.
So do you remember when the FA introduced zero tolerance on abusive language and abusive referees, and it lasted about 2 weeks and they scrapped it?
Yeah. I mean, it was the thing is, they scrapped it because everyone was saying, "Oof, there's far too much, far too many cards going in. There's games are getting abandoned because people are getting sent off." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, that is what needs to happen to shift it back to being an enjoyable sport and hobby." But people seem to be using football, Sunday League, grassroots football, youth football, as an outlet for all the frustrations that they seem to be feeling in their life outside of football. They bottle it all up and release it into that environment. Yet the FA do need to be harsher. They need to. We talk about revenue generation. It's crazy to think that they don't just go, right, everyone, the fines are going up, the bans are going up. I want to see more cards for dissent. They introduced the sin bin here in England. I don't know if they've got it over there in Australia. Whereas you get a caution for dissent and it comes with a 10-minute sin bin. So if you throw the ball away and disgust at a decision, or you get in the ref's face and scream that you're not happy with a decision, and you're cautioned for dissent, that also comes with 10 minutes off the field of play. Now, that yellow card doesn't get put in as a misconduct report. It just kind of stays within the game. So if it's just one yellow card, it gets forgotten about. Now, the FA said in the first season that this got brought in, dissent reduced by 38%. I think that was the figure. But actually, that's not an accurate... That's kind of fudging the figures, because what happened is the yellow cards for dissent that used to get put in without the sin bin stopped getting put in because the sin bins on the field of play were not getting put in. So the levels of dissent did not reduce. They just stopped getting reported. So we talk about the things that the FA are trying to do, and various organisations around the world are trying to do. I remember I used to referee in the Welsh system, and there was a time where if you gave a free kick and there was dissent, I think it's similar in rugby, if there was dissent at a free kick, you would just move the ball forward 10 yards for each piece of dissent that you get, to a point where you could give a free kick in the defensive half and end up being 18 yards out if you kept getting dissent from the opponent's goal. Again, an effective way of kind of practically dealing with dissent during the game. But in terms of actually reducing the amount of dissent or the amount of aggression that referees receive, they've not really been effective. The level of dissent and the level of aggression and abuse has, in fact, I think, gone up, especially markedly in the last two seasons.
I want to raise the role of television commentators unfairly criticising refs and just creating this army of armchair Sky fans who basically think refs are fair game to be abused.
Yeah. It would help if sports pundits actually knew the laws of the game. The amount of times I hear them offering a bit of punditry where they're just plain wrong. It's infuriating. And you'll see it when it happens on Twitter and on Facebook, on Instagram. I've just heard a commentator say this. They need to know the laws of the game. They shouldn't be in that position, because what they are in fact doing, kind of like fake news, is they are passing on this wrong information. Recently, I think Kasper Schmeichel got his hand on top of the ball and it got kicked out from underneath him, and a goal was scored. The referee disallowed it because the goalkeeper was deemed to be in control of the ball, having his hand on top of it and it being on the floor. It was for a split second, they went to VAR, and by the laws of the game, the referee made the correct decision. The pundits before, during and after that decision-making process as it went to VAR were absolutely clueless. It was as if they were commentating on a sport that they'd never watched before. They were confused. They were angry that a goal would potentially be ruled out. But as soon as I'd seen it, it's difficult to see in real time, but as soon as you see it slowed down, and that's what VAR is for, you come to very quickly the correct decision if you know the laws of the game. Football is this weird sporting phenomenon where it's played by so many people, but you ask them, if you gave them a quiz or a test on the laws of the game, 90%+ would not pass a referee's course, a basic referee's course for the laws of the game. And it's weird to have pundits in that position, being in that kind of group of ignorance, whereby they pass it over to Peter Walton on our television, former Premier League referee, and they say, oh, we're not sure about this foul, we'd have given a penalty. Peter Walton, what do you think? And Peter Walton would come in, oftentimes backing up the referee that he sees on the field of play, their decision, also quoting the laws of the game. You've got him doing that. You've got backlash against him now telling people what the laws of the game actually are. Like, oh, God, why are we going to Peter Walton? He's just going to back the referee up. And it's like, yeah, because these are referees. We know the laws of the game. We know what the correct outcome is. We know why and what the decision process to get there is. So you've got just, it's almost like you've got the scapegoat of the referee on the field. Now you've got the scapegoat of the referee in the pundits box as well. So these pundits can just have a go at him for being a referee and giving a decision that they don't like as well.
Wow. It's unbelievable. It's the same as our sports down here. The commentators have a huge role. They just focus on that one mistake as a pivotal turning point in the game rather than the thousands of things that have gone on. And it's disgusting. And it gets venomous as well. Role models straight down. Instead of role modeling to the players in this case, it role models straight down to the armchair pundits, who then go straight onto social and continue the abuse cycle.
Yeah, it's a self-perpetuating mechanism. Yeah. And something, the only thing that will stop that cycle is something, one of the hard parts, one of the components being removed. So, like I said, if it is the FA or the Premier League or whoever the broadcasters are in that particular sport, stopping physically, banning the discussion of a referee, the criticism of a decision, having pundits that don't know the laws of the game. If one of those components was changed or altered, it would massively affect the rest of the cycle as it goes round. Say, what is the answer? Because again, it's the top tier of football is more about entertainment than it is about the pure sport. That's why we've got a lot of people now switching off from Premier League and then going back to their local clubs in their local area and supporting the grassroots teams around there. The non-league football teams are seeing a massive surge in attendances because people are getting disillusioned with watching what they see now as a glitzy, glamoury Premier League that they have very little interest in. They've been priced out by things like sports channel subscription packages, match day gate fees are huge. You know, you can get into a local club for £2 or £3, whereas if you want to go to the Premier League, you're looking at £30, £40, £50. So it's a big markup to watch those top Premier League games live.
Probably the biggest issue I have in this space is child referee abuse.
And
in the torrent of abuse that you highlight on your feed, one stood out for me, and I'll read it out. One WhatsApp you received was from an under-12s games, a first versus second. A parent ran on in my face threatening me. A manager threw a flag at me. Another parent said he'd smash my face and wait for me in the car park. The referee was young and had to endure threats as, I'm going to burn you alive. When will the football authorities combat this massive disgrace to our game? Another one just had a coach make a 14-year-old female cry at an under-11 game. It's a toxic cancer abuse of child referees. When they're abused by adults, why isn't it called out for the cowardice it is? Because it continues this cycle that, again, the only place that you can scream at kids, permissible in society, is at a football game.
There you have it. Why do we allow it? And something that popped up, I think, either this morning or late last night, was from someone else. I think it was an account called RefNext or something similar. I apologise if I got that wrong. It was the wrong account. But they said, it's child abuse. It's criminal. Why are the police not involved? And the answer is, because no one wants to press charges. No one wants to be, especially if you're a 14, 15, 16-year-old referee, and you're refereeing the 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and you receive abuse, vile abuse like you've just quoted there, that you're threatening a child. You're threatening a child to burn them alive. That's criminal. But, you know, as a referee, you're put in a very, at that age, you don't have a lot of confidence. You got more confidence than a lot of people. A lot of those adults that are throwing out those insults would never step into the middle of a pitch and be a referee themselves. So you've already got more confidence than them. But in terms of confidence in yourself and going to the police, what's the protocol? How do you proceed with that? I think in those instances, they need a lot of support. And they need a lot of help from what I'd like to refer to as last week's ref as well. So if you're refereeing a game and you receive that abuse, there are a lot of referees that just take it and go, ah, well, it's part of the game. You know, you have to expect a little bit. You have to have a thick skin. And that is not true at all. And what you have to think of is, okay, me as 6 foot Ant Canavan, 100 kilos, mostly muscle, little bit of flabby bits around the belly, but we'll ignore that. I can handle, I have got the thick skin. I can handle what we'd call the higher levels of dissent, but I wouldn't accept abuse and I would report it up to the county. There are referees out there, a little bit more timid, who would just take the abuse, not show cards and therefore not report it. And then the players that have given the abuse think, well, I gave it to last week's ref, I can give it to next week's ref. Until we've got more referees that say, no, if you abuse a referee, you're getting reported, you are going to get fined, you are going to get banned. The clubs need to take a little bit of responsibility as well. If you've got a player that or parents that are throwing that sort of abuse at a referee, you need to say, look, we don't, as good as football you may be, we don't want you giving our club a bad reputation by threatening children. And if these kids do go to the police with the full support of their county FA or their local referees association, then a big song and dance should be made about it, not as what currently happens. A misconduct report is submitted to the county FA and then the rest of the process takes place behind closed doors, including any sort of notification of punishment. It needs the stronger referees now to step up at grassroots and start saying, I'm not going to take this anymore. I've got to think of the kids that are just coming into the game. Would I allow my 14-year-old son or daughter to receive this sort of abuse? If the answer is no, then you also need to not take that abuse and just let it roll off you as a part of the game, because it's not acceptable. You know, I'm lucky enough in my position in Merseyside. We've got two Premier League clubs, Liverpool and Everton, and I get to referee at their academies fairly regularly, and I receive absolutely zero abuse. And it's because the parents know if they do anything that would jeopardise the place of their child playing football for those two Premier League clubs, then they're having a proper detrimental effect on that child. The same thing needs to happen at grassroots outside of these academies. If your parent is throwing vile abuse to the referee, if they're threatening physically or verbally a referee, then the clubs need to say, I'm sorry, but we don't want your child in our club if that's your behaviour as a parent. Clubs try and curb the behaviour by getting the parents to sign a code of conduct, but those, they're meaningless. They're absolutely meaningless, because there's no enforcement taken if the code of conduct is breached. What we really need to do is, like I say, action, actual, real action to change the game, and not lip service, not fancy adverts, something that will physically alter the game. Because the lad that got threatened to be burnt alive, that was only the weekend just gone. I received that via WhatsApp and I was like, this is disgusting. And to be fair, the Referees Association here, they've got a welfare team. As soon as they spotted that on my feed as well, they jumped in and said, pass on our details. Please, 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 we will look after this referee. Give him all the support that he needs, because they understand they don't want referees to drop out at this point of their, say, refereeing career. Because it can be long, it can go on decades, but don't let these idiots at this level ruin it for you. Don't, because refereeing can be very enjoyable. You can get to go some amazing places. I've traveled the world refereeing. I've refereed international teams. I've had some amazing times. I've been to some amazing stadiums, met some amazing people. You can do all that as a referee, but not if in the first 5-10 games, your first season, your first couple of seasons, you get abuse, you think, I do not want any part of this. If this is what football is about, I don't want to do it for a decade or two. I don't want to do it at all. And that's why you're seeing people drop out. We need a cultural shift back to mutual respect on both sides. Respect the referee, because never will a referee go out onto that field of play to abuse anyone. And the players will say, well, respect, you know, the ref needs to respect, show me respect first. Well, no, you start off on a level foot in mutual respect. That's what it's about. It's an understanding. You play your football, I'll referee the game. You're going to do your best to score the goals. I'm going to do my best to get all the decisions in between correct. We're all out there doing our best. If mistakes are made, so be it. I won't criticise you for missing an open goal from 2 yards away, so don't criticise me for missing an offside when I wasn't in a good position. That's the sort of attitude that needs to come forward.
I just want to explore one of your earlier points about if the parent mucks up, you get rid of the child as well. That comes as a package. And down here, there's always this movement that said, don't visit the sins of the parent on the child, which stimulates the debate. You know, is football a right or a privilege? And I think we've got to move it from a right to a privilege. It used to be a right in the old days. I think now it should be a privilege, like attending any club or any institution. You can't go down your local gymnasium and start abusing people that you're a member of. So I'm with you. I think the kid will be collateral damage, but I just don't think the parent has the right to bring on, and no one talks about this, bring on the onset of potential mental health issues in a lot of these refs as well. When I'm reading your feed, I'm thinking to myself, what we're seeing here is straight up people having to stop refereeing because they're sleeping on it and having nightmares about it and worried about their safety. Why isn't this framed as a mental health problem?
Well, the thing is, we're treating the symptom, not the cause, because the FA have just said, great news, everyone. We've just trained up 50 mental health champions. So if you're having mental health issues, you can come and talk to one of these. Okay, let's actually say what's causing these mental health issues in the first place and target them. There'll always be mental health issues that will come about regardless. So it could be that the world's most respectful football and you're doing your best and everyone, you're not receiving abuse, you're having a great time, but there'll still be something else that will affect your mental health. That's just the nature of what mental health is. So I'm not criticizing the fact that we have mental health champions. It's a good thing. But the fact that we're just throwing out mental health champions as a solution to referees that are receiving abuse. No, 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 no. Let's just stop the abuse. Then we wouldn't need so many mental health champions.
Yeah, perfect. I've got to bring up the elephant in the room, and, you know, it's a place you're a colossus, and that is old referees didn't have to deal with social media and sniping, and, you know, the abuse just doesn't happen on the field. You go home and you'll get a second dose of it. But even at international level or FA level, EPL level, even if the officials get it correct and Twitter will jump on, they don't have any ideas, the laws, it gets personal. People through one-upmanship end up increasing their abuse levels for referee. We can control what happens on the pitch with quite draconian crackdowns on behaviour. What can be done about social? You're right in the guts of it.
It needs to come from the social media companies. Yeah. In the same way that it's their platform. We're quite far down in the pecking order in terms of referee abuse. Before that, you've got things like racism, you've got political death threats. And then eventually, as you go through all of the hate, all of the abusive tweets and stuff like that, eventually you will get down to the personal insults on referees. That's the sort of level that we're at. But in terms of a platform, Twitter is toxic. It's horrible. And because of the anonymity it provides, people can and will say anything that they want, and there's no repercussions, or there wasn't until recently, repercussions for them doing that. So people that would throw out monkey emojis to a black footballer if they've had a bad performance, you know, it's vile, it's disgusting, but people do it and get away with it. So because they've got away with it, that kind of reinforces you've not done anything wrong. No one's found out. Do it again. What's the worst that could happen? Nothing. I do think, like I said, I'm very open and transparent about who operates the referee forum. I will call out dickish behaviour when I see it. You know, that methodology has gotten me into trouble with my football association. Abuse on social media is not something that the FA should concern themselves with. It is something that if criminal, the police should deal with.
Yeah.
But in terms of a platform itself, get rid of the anonymity and 99% of the abusive tweets would stop tomorrow. Yeah,
some accountability. One part of your offensive arsenal I really like is the way you call out people blaming the refs for their own. And there's one meme that says, make sure to blame the referee to hide your own deficiencies as a coach. And it's always the ref's fault when you lose. Another one is, you know, the ref making it all about himself, cost us, so they're biased or incompetent. And another favourite was, I don't tell the players how crap they are when they frequently miss sitters. And that one really rammed, that one really rammed home for me. It would be hilarious. It's amazing that one mistake, going back to your earlier point, one mistake and you get basically lambasted as having a bad game, but there's just crap going on all around you. It's, the irony is just, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe that's the way I deal with it. You know, I have a background in entertainment. I was managing a comedy club before COVID hit. So my way of dealing with a lot of these is with humour. And so I make a lot of memes. That's probably why the social pages are so popular. If you want to get a message out there now, don't make a fancy video. Don't write a long statement. Throw it on a meme, put a funny picture on it, and people will pay more attention to that than they would for the multi-million pound advert that you're trying to release with a similar message. We've got to laugh in a kind of gallows humoured way, because as referees that are still in the game, and bear in mind in England, we've gone from 30,000 referees a couple of seasons ago pre-COVID to about 21,000 referees now. So almost a third of all of our referees have gone, do you know what? I'm really not enjoying it enough to want to come back and officiate anymore. So we've had a huge dropout. If we can't laugh at this situation that we're in, then the only alternative is to cry. And then we need more mental health champions. And I don't think there's enough in the world to kind of deal with that.
Yeah.
So at the moment, yeah, I you know, on the refereeforum.com, I throw out loads of memes. If anyone wants to go check them out, they can do it there. But there's also some good campaigns as well. So using the meme format, I ask people to send me photos of themselves refereeing in their kit, because we're proud as referees. We love what we do. We love football just as much as any player, as any fan or anyone like that. And we love being part of the game. I think people forget that sometimes. People think, oh, the referee wants to ruin the game. No, we want to enjoy the game as much as anyone. We do enjoy the game most of the time, but there just does need to be that this lid put on. If I can raise awareness or make people think about their actions with memes, with funny quips, or with calling out troll behaviour very directly, sometimes, maybe, like I said, it's gotten me into trouble with my methodology sometimes, but it's something I'm prepared to do. I'm prepared to take the slings and arrows to change people's behavior. And I think some people you'll never change, and they'll always be that way. And they're the ones we need to remove from football. We need it to be cut out like cancer. But there's people that will listen, they will be educated, and they will see a side that is mutually beneficial for everyone. The more refs that we have, the bigger the talent pool, the more cream will rise to the top, and the better our officials will be in 5 years and 10 years' time. But the fewer referees that we have, because they're dropping out because of the abuse, because of the offensive insults, we've got a smaller talent pool. Referees will struggle to progress. Burnout is a thing. You know, I'd say October, I was probably doing anywhere between 6 to 10 games a week, just because there's a massive shortage of referees. You know, I'm fit enough to get out there to run around that much, so I'll do it. But you can't do that for a whole season, and I ended up taking most of November off. Fortunately, the COP26 came along, and as I said, I work in a security industry, so I took 3 weeks and I was working on that. So that was a good time to kind of rest and have a little break from football.
Now, one solution I've heard is to just go to the next level and have the police at every game. Cowards tend to respond and shrivel up when actual police are around and accountability, because making it a police matter, it seems too late. It's already happened. Funding, council's funding and putting police at games, walking around. What do you think about that?
They do it in America, and they still have the issues. I mean, youth soccer tournaments in the United States are a goldmine for viral videos. A game will be abandoned because game's done, game's over. And then the parents will come onto the pitch, they'll all have a fight with each other, and then they'll get separated by the police. These tournaments have on-site police for the duration because they expect that sort of behaviour from the parents or from the coaches, maybe, and also maybe from the players. So having police present, no, I don't think it would change anything. Unless, like I say, we're prepared to admit that there is a problem, then no one's going to press charges. As soon as we say, yes, there's a problem and the people that are doing it need to be dealt with and removed from the game, or probably removed from children, if we're being honest, they can't control themselves enough to not offer death threats to a 14-year-old referee. They shouldn't be around children anywhere. Yeah. So would the police being present change anything? It would stop a few people, but it wouldn't stop the problem.
What about putting GoPro cameras on referees so we can find out what they're going through and bring some accountability that way?
Again, we know what the referees are going through. Do we really need video evidence of it as well? It might help. All it would do is produce more content for me on social media, which is fantastic, because that's what I want. The more videos and stuff that I put out, the more the page grows and the wider the audience. At the same time, let's be honest, we know what the problem is. If a referee says that person has said X, Y, and Z, okay, there might be a few referees that embellish, but for the most part, no referees are lying and making that up, because they don't need to. The level of vitriol and abuse out there doesn't need to be embellished. It's horrendous already. Having GoPros, having body cams or anything like that, what would it change? Would people not behave that way because they'd be caught on camera? Well, again, let's have a look at other people, other roles that use body cameras in their job. Traffic wardens, police, or say security people that work in pubs that are a little bit dodgy. All of those people wear body cameras to capture the behavior that they have to deal with. It doesn't change the behavior. If you're going to abuse a traffic warden, if you're going to abuse security, if you're going to abuse anyone that's wearing a body camera as part of their role, you're going to do it whether they're wearing a body camera or not. And at the moment, there's enough people out there. Like I said, the referees will put in a report to say, I've been abused, this has happened, that's happened. It's then down to the FA to follow that misconduct charge and offer a punishment. Video evidence really doesn't change that process.
All right, we're going to end on a positive note. First, you've got some good examples, what works, what you've seen work. I see the Liverpool Old Boys featuring quite frequently on your feed. What are some things that you've seen work, and what are some programs that we can look to as having got it right?
Well, there you go. The Liverpool Old Boys League here in Merseyside is a fantastic example. There's a lad called Greg, and he is absolutely smashing it. Before the season even started, he went, right, we're sick of the kind of behaviour of certain elements of the team, certain teams and certain spectators of those teams. So if you're going to play in our league, here are the rules that you have to abide by. And we are going to monitor this, and we are going to take punitive action if this code of conduct isn't adhered to. And they did it, and they actually punished people, the offenders. Very, very quickly, the teams realized if we don't conform, we don't get to play football. And as much as they wanted to win every game and would abuse the referee or their spectators, would shout grief or step onto the pitch when they weren't welcome and stuff like that, their behavior, because of this hardline approach, did change. And it's got to, you know, there was a meeting at the start of the season where all of the referees, representatives from the clubs, the managers, the coaches, all got together, and the kind of the framework of the league was laid out. This is acceptable, this is not acceptable, and here's the process that we are going to take in order to make sure that this is done. There was agreement at that point. Everyone was in the same room. No one could say, well, I didn't know, I didn't sign up to this. And that, I think, is from a league perspective, the right way to go about things. And the engagement, I'm in a WhatsApp group for that particular league, and the engagement from the referees, if there's any problems, it goes into the WhatsApp group straight away. And then obviously in real time, there is support for that referee. That referee needs assistance in writing a report to misconduct to get that to the county FA in order for the correct punishment to be done. They'll do it. They'll back the referee all the way. Whereas some leagues are quite happy for the clubs to hold all the power, because every club that registered with the league is money for the league. And they're quite happy to say, well, clubs, you behave how you want. You want to abuse referees. They've got red and yellow cards. They can sort it out themselves. You just keep paying your subscription to the league, and we'll just let you keep playing football regardless of what goes on. And Liverpool Old Boys have said, you know what? We don't want teams that will have a negative reputation on our league. And it's been, what, we were in December now, the league started in September. The perception of the referees on that league is that it's a marked improvement on what it has been. And hold them up as a beacon. There's two entities at the moment that I say, look at these two groups. This is how it should be done. As a league, it's Liverpool Old Boys. And as a county FA, it's North Riding Football Association, because they look after their youth referees, their programs and what they have in place to bring referees through the system, into the system, and progress them as well is phenomenal. I wish every county was like North Riding Football Association, and I wish every league was like Liverpool Old Boys. And I encourage anybody that listens to this to go on Twitter and look up those two and just follow them, follow the work that they do, and take their example as best practice.
And finally, you have a hashtag called Ref Positivity. It's shame that it needs its own hashtag.
Yeah, it's a shame I don't get to use it more often.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like say, awareness and positive kind of attitude towards referees, whenever I spot a club that have enjoyed a referee's performance, I like to retweet that and have hashtag Ref Positivity. And if anyone listens to this and you do have a good referee, it's important to acknowledge that as well, because, as I said, referees do get good enjoyment from the game, and we know when we've had a good game in the same way we know when we've had a bad game. But it's nice to get praise from the teams, from the players and the coaches that you referee as well. Sometimes it happens on the field of play at the end of the game where you're shaking hands. Nice one, ref. That was a really good game. And you say back, thanks very much. It was a good game to referee. That's good. But to see it on social media, where people only seem to jump on to leave a mean tweet, a negative tweet, to abuse someone over a performance, especially when it comes from official club accounts, that really sickens me, because it's basically the club saying, well, we've abused a referee on the pitch for 90 minutes, but that wasn't enough. So we're going to use our official online presence to abuse them after the game is finished as well. No referee would ever jump on Twitter and say a striker was crap for missing an open goal, or a centre-back should have made a tackle that led to their opponent scoring, and if they were a little bit better. This is very polite tweeting, by the way. Not one swear word in there.
Yeah.
You can tell I'm a ref, but it's not vile, it's not horrible, it's not hateful. And no referee would ever jump on there to do that to a player or a coach or a manager. But very, very quickly, it seems, they, players, coaches, managers, seem to want to get on social media. And again, it's a deflection. We go back to what it was. It's a deflection from their own deficiencies. If you are good enough to win a football match, you don't need the referee on your side, so to speak. The referee is impartial. He's not giving anything one way or the other. The referee is impartial. He or she is out there giving their best possible performance, calling it straight down the middle. If you didn't win and you thought you should have done, have a look at your own players, have a look at your own tactics before having a look at the referee, because the referee really didn't influence the game that much.
Before we sign off, how can people find you?
There's the refereeforum.com. We are sponsored by backstitch.com, which is my wife's business. She's a clothing fabricator. We do custom clothes and stuff like that, so I've got to get that plug in.
Yep.
Loads of referee designs on there. Get yourself one of those t-shirts, hoodies, hats, all that sort of stuff. On Facebook, facebook.com/referee forum, instagram.com/thereferee forum, twitter.com/thereferee forum, and I am on all of those as well. If you want to follow me, it's Ant Canavan on all of those platforms as well.
Well, I want to say congratulations. You're doing heroic work, a voice for the voiceless in many ways, and you're up there giving a muscular presence to referees. Thanks for your time, and excellent. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Pat, and hopefully we can come back and revisit this in maybe the end of the season or next year and see how things have changed.
Indeed.
Hopefully for the better.
Well done.
Cheers, Pat. Thanks, all the best.